Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody got a part-time job thanks to Fukushima radiation as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guests are Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, a.k.a. Jeremy. And I want to give out their websites again. So Jeremy's website is thestygianport.wordpress.com. That's thestygianport.wordpress.com. And Frank's website is projectpsycube.blogspot.com. That's projectpsycube.blogspot.com. Now, the word Stygian, what does that mean? I've heard it used a number of times, but I haven't looked up a definition.
It's basically like catonic or otherworldly or underworldly from the River Styx. I don't even know where it came from, honestly. It just kind of goes with my whole theme I got going on here. Basically, my general overriding theme, I guess you could say, on my blog, by sort of the mythology I get from movies, but that also informs the world we live in, the sort of view that it's a matrix and all that, is basically that this is literally hell, and not in the Christian sense of, you know, there's not burning bodies and rivers of brimstone or whatever the hell is supposed to be going on, but it's the material sort of incubation or prison or matrix or whatever you want to say that we're kind of stuck in, and that every physical life is a spiritual death, and every physical death is a spiritual life, and you kind of go back and forth between the two. And I don't know if, you know, reincarnation is true or not. I guess you'll never know, because you go through the various rivers in the underworld, and one of them erases your memory, so unless you can remember your past life. But it's sort of, yeah, I put a positive spin on it, I guess. I mean, you could call this place hell, but then you think, well, it's the worst thing ever. But you know, a seed has to be grown in a dark matrix underneath the soil. You can't just leave it laying around. It needs to go from darkness to light. And I hope that with my blog and, you know, generally raising the global consciousness as a whole, just by working on myself, that, you know, I'm helping everyone move from darkness to light. And that's kind of the main theme. Try not to focus on the hell part of it, I would say.
Mm. And Frank, where does this Psy Cube come from? Have you ever seen the movie Cube?
I don't think so. I know what you're talking about, though. The Cube is just a theme that when Violator and Trevor and I got together, which is another guy in Psy Cube, we were focusing on, I think, how the Cube was one of the larger synchromistic themes we saw everywhere. And I know that personally, the Borg cube from Star Trek, the cube from Transformers, the Allspark cube, and the Cosmic cube, which is kind of where Cosmic Comics comes from, that is in the Red Skull, the Captain America storylines, a lot of other Marvel stuff, got me started just in seeing these symbols as blatant and having a lot of the same assimilative, archonic, if you will, kind of attributes in taking over other people. And it another one that kind of fits in there next to the cube is the black oil. Not that all these things are always used for bad, but the black oil always seems to be an assimilative, possessive force. In the X-Files, we see it as synonymous with what oil is in our real world today, but then it's also an alien virus that takes over people, possesses them towards an alien agenda. In South Park, BP drills until they drill out these Cthulhu-like entities. And then they joke about drilling into the moon and things like that. But the black oil is very involved in that plot. And then Spider-Man has this suit of black oil, which is, you know, with all the Venom plots and things like that, which actually came from the moon and, you know, takes over his body and possesses other people and then breaks into other kind of forms. And this kind of crosses over in a lot of conspiracy area, but the age-old science fiction idea that's in a lot of conspiracies of alien possession, or people losing their minds, a group of people being taken over by alien host or whatever, or rather taking human host, comes up repeatedly. I think it's all kind of intertied. But yeah, the Psy Cube was just kind of coming up with a name to give us real quick, because we had been producing so much work. I wanted to just give us kind of a flagship, icon there.
Well, would you elaborate a little bit further on some of the work that you've been doing? Because we've been wanting to get into comics and cartoons. And I mentioned over the break that what we're doing is we're kind of having more of a conversation, like you say something and I say something and then he says something. Whereas I like it when in talk radio where somebody continues to elaborate and really, really talk on a subject and bring it to light, as it were.
Sure. I think that one of the larger things that I've found that's driven me to continue doing cross-referencing work with the comics and the cartoons outside of their own field or outside of just growing up and really liking the stuff, particularly X-Men, a lot of comic-related licenses that had turned into cartoons. I kept seeing themes over and over that from doing, you know, any amount of shallow research in the conspiracy theory field or alien abduction field, or even particularly with the RFID and the things we're talking about in the beginnings of the show, they seemed like all the conspiracy theorists were sure of the stuff, and they had their own forms of documentation, which some people argued with, and they had their own, you know, whistleblowers and conspiracy theorists or victims or whatever, and all these groups of people that went around trying to affirm that these things happened to them and are true. And there's not a lot of proof. And then there's all of these cartoons and movies that illustrate it in the exact same way, usually coming out at the exact same time that the speaker begins to start speaking about it. So as much as people would like to say, well, certainly this conspiracy theorist had this idea, then this person made a movie about it, and I have tracked those kind of logical progressions and the ideas, there's still this overriding thing of, like, you know, someone talks about a particular type of abduction case that's really strange, or a particular super soldier testimony that's really bizarre and links with aliens or something. And then I can't find anything to really prove to anyone that these people are telling the truth, although I can cross-reference their stories, just like alien abduction, to say that something is definitely happening to them. But then there's no proof divide, and then over here on the other side, there's the cartoons and the comics, which are reaffirming it and obsessed with it and never go outside of the boundaries of just reinvigorating these stories, if you will. And that could be due to the collective consciousness coming to, I guess, a breaking point, or rather the unconscious coming to a breaking point with ideas like about, you know, secret programs or underground layers or whatever. Or perhaps this is more a reflection of the idea that the reptilian brain is kind of buried at the bottom of the brain and is responsible for these bottom chakra responses that lead to paranoia and lead to wars and all these things. And perhaps, just like Violator's talking about the underworld, we're seeing the talk about these underground bases and all these heinous things going on might be some reflection of an underworld or a hell-like place where people's memories are being manipulated and stuff like that. So beyond these kind of exotic metaphors, I can't give anyone any real straight answers. I've just, with the rest of the group, begun to take a lot of different fictions, different TV shows, films, and, like I'm saying, particular comics and things, and begun to kind of unzip it and say, you know, we're not forcing anyone to look at the stuff. You already enjoy the show, just enjoy the show or what have you. But we found an uncanny amount of resemblances between these things and certain syncs, if you will, with certain actors and all kind of particular stuff that seems to be really the fodder of the beginning of the explosion of science fiction, the Golden Age comic book movement that we've never shook off because perhaps we never took seriously as ideas or as programs or however you have to classify that in your mind as something that needs to be investigated further or evolved upon.
Now, you've heard of Jules Verne and how he came up with the ideas for a number of different contraptions, devices, and inventions that later became true. You know, and I find that that's a really interesting part about science fiction and other things like that are put out as fantasy and later they become real.
Yeah, I think Gene Roddenberry. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say not just science fiction, but sort of the imagination. Where the heck did Leonardo da Vinci get the idea for, you know, a tank and a helicopter? And is he building off of previous inventions? But none of those things have been built. And like you said, Jules Verne with rocket ships to the moon. It's no one could even conceive of that when planes were, you know, barely, dirigibles were barely in the air, I guess, at the time. It's part of that whole, like, what's on that other side that we sometimes contact and sometimes can't, and that we call aliens today, but yesterday was gods and golden chariots, and before that it was something else. Pretty much every religion and every kind of group around the world has a story of where they got their culture, who taught them how to make weapons and jewelry and so on, and it's always some usually tall being from the sky or from underground or something like that. It was the Nephilim or the Gregory angels, and you know, in the Bible, and we have all kinds of giants being found all over the world. And you know, it's very confusing, but it's very also interesting to think about, like, where do creative people get their ideas and how these ideas get out in the world? Is everything part of a motivation? And if so, whose motivation and who's actually influencing artists to put out works with reptilian, you know, aliens or what have you?
Yeah.
You've heard of the phrase, there's nothing new under the sun.
Right. And that's often very true. You know, could be any number of things, really. But I try not to focus on the downside, like I said, the conspiracies. I don't even listen to the news anymore, you know. It's just, you kind of have to work on yourself, which is what I'm doing, which I always encourage other people to do, is the only way you're going to evolve the global consciousness is if each of us takes our own initiative to evolve our own consciousness. You can't beat someone over the head with 9/11 was an inside job and make them accepting to your ideas. You know, it's just not going to happen. People evolve on their own. And like, speaking of inventions, you know, four people or whatever invented steam engine at the same time. There's a whole list of inventions that came out exact same time in different places through different people, sometimes racing each other to the patent office, not knowing it. It seems like there's a plan, and there's sort of this gradual, you know, increase in technology and gradual increase in of course, going to space, but also inner space. And it seems like maybe, you know, I don't know if it's a Terrence McKenna sort of singularity at the end of time that's kind of pulling us forward, or if we're being pushed forward. There's always been theories that aliens were trapped underground and trying to get us to build spacecraft so that they can leave the planet. And I don't know, just one of those bizarre tangents that I like to go off on.
Right,
I think there's a lot to be said.
Go ahead, Frank.
I think there's a lot to be said for Gene Roddenberry and a lot of the ideas that wound up coming true with Star Trek. And if you're ever kind of doubting, I guess, the synchromystic ability to pull this stuff out of the ether and put it in just nonstop artwork, I would do a study of Jack Kirby and Gene Roddenberry. You know, and anyone acquainted with culture and history of popular events and inventions and things will see how ahead of the curve and constantly on point those two individuals were. And I would suggest a lot of the Christopher Knowles' work over at The Secret Sun, which is constantly, he did a lot of great work on Gene Roddenberry in there, but is constantly going back to Jack Kirby as the source material. And I found it very successful too. At the end of the day, like Violators saying, kind of stay positive with it. I find it most constructive to go back to the comics and to go back to the art and the work more than it is to just amass more data about possible, you know, end time scenarios or something like that. What's going to get us in the end or whatever.
Mm. Well, see, the advancement of technology, I think, has been unbelievably fast in the 20th and 21st and the earlier part of this 21st century. Somebody living in just as much as 15 years ago or something like that, you transport them to today, they wouldn't have any idea how things work.
Yeah, it'd definitely be very disorienting. I think people would be angry at the lack of attention span and change and just formal ways of doing things and communicating. I also think that with 3D printing, we're about to hit another mass arc, kind of like the internet or whatever, where we're really going to shift around a lot of stuff about industry and the way people get ideas out there and what the individual's capable of doing. And if we can use that kind of technological model psycho-spiritually and know that a lot of the data is out there to save the world or save our bodies, just kind of sitting there in a lot of different sources waiting for us to tune into it, I have a better direction.
Well, do you have any specific examples of this? Has this happened before?
Of which?
Of humanity kind of just locking onto a piece of technology and everything changing in a very positive and only positive way.
Oh, no. I don't think there's any example like that. It's just you got to go back to this idea of you can have a tool and you can use it. You can use a tool for something very terrible or to change people or control people, or you can use it to give everyone the ability to adapt to better living standards or something. And I don't have everything figured out to a T like in a Buckminster Fuller way, but I guess there's a lot of people I can point you toward. Jason Louv, who I don't know if I'm pronouncing that successfully, but the writer of Generation Hex just came out with a free book that I would tell everyone to look at. It's kind of based off this premise of in not too many pages, just getting reacquainted with how to deal with society and self and technology, kind of be psycho-spiritually self-contained. And I guess that can work as a metaphor for, like I was saying, ways to deal with technology and stuff, putting that in the hands of people and educating them, whatever.
One of my concerns is something that I do see happen a lot, is that people know how to communicate and have relationships with technology better than they do with people.
Sure. Well, I think that robot person is very required in, like, these days. Social requirements, you're not really supposed to talk about anything personal, anything super meaningful. People keep kind of saying the way that there's rules for, like, bars or churches or whatever about not getting into politics. I guess churches would get into religion, so I defeat my example. But that's the way that all of society is becoming. Everything's a touchy kind of topic, and so everyone wants to stay very much what was on TV today and what's the acceptable provided argument. I watched this show, but then I watched this other show. I sided with this individual. Now that generates public discussion. Things outside of that are considered untimely, unpop, and, boring or something. And so that constantly shifting, uninformed but extreme public argument, I guess, keeps people from really wanting to or being able to delve into things and be proud of it or want to talk about interesting topics they're getting into. Basically what I'm getting at is that we've already surpassed, are you going to get some kind of mechanical implant? Are you going to get some kind of robot eye in the future? Or are we going to have these alterations? We've jumped way ahead of that, and we're saying that, oh, that person plays video games way too much. But yet we all have this social requirement of, like, a Walmart or Best Buy greeter smile, coped with only staying on popular topics and staying with things that would keep people on a certain wavelength, I suppose.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I've on occasions been sitting at cafes or around dinner tables, and the conversation simply doesn't interest me in any way, shape, or form that is going on around me. And I just switch off and think, this is boring. This is pointless. It doesn't make any sense. And I switch off, kind of in the opposite way to the way they would. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I was just thinking about this term post-apocalyptic, and it was interesting. You know the Kevin Costner movie, The Postman?
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Postman.
Literally a post-apocalyptic future.
Yeah. The world after man.
That's quite funny, isn't it?
That's probably what it'll look like. Nuclear winter and radiated skies. Water you can't drink. It's pretty much where we're headed.
Yeah. To a degree is what we got already. Just thinking about this, if you wanted to, like, go and purchase some clean food, you better look frickin' hard, man.
Yeah. It's not, well, I mean, it's clean because it's been soaked in ammonia or radiated when crossing the border to keep it, fresh longer. Remember in, I don't know if you've seen it, but 28 Days Later?
Yeah,
you go
to
a grocery store, all the food is rotted except for the apples, and one of the guys says, ooh, I love radiation.
No, he goes, irradiated.
Yeah, there you go. Geez, you're better at movie quotes than I am.
I can fire
you, Vinny. Might have to get you on the side cube.
Oh, I can recite lots and lots and lots of stuff from films, comedy acts, and things like that. It's a talent I had from a really young age. As a child, I was able to recite certain films back to back.
Do you have ADHD or Asperger's or something? I find that I'm kind of on the Asperger-y spectrum. I have a lot of the symptoms. And that's kind of, like we were saying, people being close to machines. I mean, people who tend to not be very sociable, like people on that autism spectrum, are better at machines. I mean, I'd rather interact with most people via the internet than in person, and it's not because I wasn't necessarily raised with it. I mean, the internet came out when I was already in high school, you know, basically when we first got on the net. So, you know, but I remember reading a lot of people in Silicon Valley were having kids with autism because all those people with the same predilection in their DNA were getting together, and it was creating much more concentrated versions of that. And it really is sort of a new race that just can deal with the machines better for some reason.
Yeah, either that or they all really, really, really believe in vaccines.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate truth. Is I got every vaccine in the textbook. My dad was in the military, so we had the vaccine schedule. You know, when I was in Guam, where they don't fluoridate the water, we had to put fluoride pills in our mouth so that we could have that fluoride. So I actually had to suck on fluoride pills as a child. Maybe that explains some of my weirdness. I don't know.
Well, you know, this is the other thing, when you're damaged when you're young, especially if you've experienced some kind of brain trauma or something like that, the person you become will never be the person you could have become had those things not happened to you. And how do you reconcile that?
Yeah, I don't know. I believe.
Yeah. I was always wondering what I'd be like if my father wasn't violent, or if I never got arrested, or if all my bosses hadn't been psychopaths or something like that. You know, it'd be interesting what kind of a person I'd turn into, but he's gone. Whoever that person might have been is not here anymore. I'm all that's left.
Wouldn't be hosting this awesome show, so maybe it's all for a reason.
Well, I don't know. I think when people think fatalistically like that, like, oh, it's all for a reason, you can only look at that in retrospect. You can never say all of this stuff is going to happen to me for a reason. I'm going to get to that point, which makes me think that people are attempting to reconcile things by saying that it's all for a reason when there really might not be one at all.
I think that's if you're more optimistic and saying, well, the good will come. I'm not. I'm pessimistic, and I say it's just going to get worse from here on out. But, you know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for previous, you know, whatever hardships or good chips in my life. And
I'm kind of dualistic. I think it's all going to get better and worse at the same time.
Split apart. We'll be living in like an island that's safe from everything, but meanwhile, the New World Order rules everything else.
Yeah, that are a whole bunch of people that are just going to get even more retarded, and the rest of the people are going to become a lot smarter and figure stuff out faster, you know? And those will be the like people you hang out with. Yeah, yeah. It's a scary concept, and to think about, you know, who you would have been had certain things not happened to you. And this comes back into you mentioned the time traveler. You ever seen those movies where the person goes back in time and they change one tiny little thing and then they come back and everything's different?
Surely.
Yeah, Butterfly Effect was one. To use that. It's one of those paradoxes, though. Like, would it be a different universe? There's that theory that there's like an unlimited potential, you know, alternatives going on, like in the future. So, you know, so many minutes, hours, years, decades into the future, there's more and more potential possibilities. You could quit your job today and, you know, go sell, you know, ice cream on the street or something. And that's Vinny, you know, 10 years from now as an ice cream vendor. You'd never really know. Like, there's so many possibilities, and until one happens, you know, that kind of sets it into stone. I mean, the other day I was riding my bike, I almost got killed by a truck, and I was just contemplating that. Like, I could have been in some other universe. I'm dead right now. You know, my family's grieving over me or whatever. And that could have happened so many times in the past, and it could happen many more times in the future, I'm sure. And, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe my pessimistic view, I always turn to the dark side. But, yeah, when I try not to contemplate too many alternatives.
Have you ever seen the movie The One with Jet Li?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he kills his parallel selves to make himself stronger, something like that.
Yeah, there's like 1,000 parallel universes, and this dude figures out a way to travel in between them. And what he finds is that if he kills himself in another universe, that person's power gets equally divided amongst all the remaining hims in all the different universes. So he wants to kill all of himself in all the parallel universes so that he'll be the one and he'll be all-powerful. It's quite an interesting concept. Yeah. And yeah. and they're all living these different lives with different careers and different levels of skill sets and all of these tiny little things that made somebody who they are in the different parallel universes. That thing didn't happen, and instead another thing happened. Like you were talking about, like you could have been killed in front of that, and in some of these parallel universes, one of those people actually dies. Or is already dead and things of this nature. So I was just wondering about this. And what is the point, really, though, at wondering about those other existences that you may or may not have? As far as I'm concerned, there's really only one existence for me to experience subjectively, and that's this one.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, I think there's a point in, you know, you being able to see out of one person and being in individual, and then at the same time there's a point in going through the collective experience and changing as one organism or one species, and so they have their individual, I guess, readouts with that kind of data, to again use the word sync, I guess, you in the right direction if you choose to go down that path.
Well, we were talking about this yesterday, about how when you're doing what you believe to be right, and nobody can tell you what's right, and only you can feel it, but you can't really think it or intellectualize it. There really is a feeling here. Am I doing what's right? Is this correct? And it seems that when you follow that instinct, suddenly roadblocks in your life get pushed out of the way. But they don't get pushed out of the way immediately when you want them to disappear. They only disappear when you absolutely need them to. Like if you can't pay your rent one week or something like that, suddenly the day before your rent has to get paid, somebody will just turn up with a couple of $100 for you for some reason.
Yeah, I think we like somehow we push those things into the unconscious and we're worried about them or we need them to happen. And so that's when you really take the reins. And in one day you'll do a bunch of things successfully and things will turn out your way. Well, you probably just focused something in the light of your mind or whatever to correspond directly with doing these things successfully, just like older magical or mystical systems are obsessed with doing. Aleister Crowley's idea of the will, I think, fits really well here. The idea that instead of what most people kind of savagely misinterpreted as do whatever you want, is much more validly interpreted as do exactly what you're here for and don't waste any time getting to know various systems and experiences or whatever to show you where you're going and equate you with more paths. And that's what he was doing magically. I didn't know the man. I don't know whether morally he was one to be followed, but this philosophy of take the reins and be responsible for the thing outside of all kind of other limitations so that you can get things done and can quite literally, in his case, climb mountains or learn various systems of yoga or whatever. That's a really interesting point, you know?
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. If you're currently doing a job that you don't like, don't just go get another job that you know you won't like just so that you can have a 6 months of difference. Quit them all and figure out what you really want out of this life and start doing that. You know, that's what I did. And as far as I know, the many, many people that I've spoken to on this radio show, that's basically what they've all done. You have to let go of what you consciously think you need, you know, like you need a roof over your head, you need money supply, financial security, that kind of thing. All of doing all that your entire life makes you really fracking unhappy, right? And yeah. And it's only once you let go of all that and you realize, hey, it doesn't actually matter. I'm not doing what I'm meant to be doing. I'm not who I'm supposed to be. That's the reason why I feel like crap. Not because my job isn't satisfying. It's because my life isn't satisfying. And more to the point, nobody else made me live this life. I'm doing it all to myself.
Yeah, exactly. People get confused when they start chasing down a bunch of repeatedly approved or suggested totems as opposed to exploring long enough in their life to get a sense of direction or what they prefer or what that would make them happy. And those totems have been around forever and, you know, like I was saying before, kind of promoted by the media and hasn't really changed. You know, they might change the bottle or the look of the package of the cigarette or just whatever, but it's what people keep telling themselves. they need. And obviously, these ideas I keep bringing up about mystery or adventure or magic aren't going to come true if you're going back and forth between my job sucks, so I need to get messed up, or I need to go, you know, party and forget everything that happened today. And then that process just repeats itself, and somewhere along the line, you're like paying rent or making parents happy or something like that with the physical things you've accomplished. But it seems like a lot of people are getting lost up in paying for college or getting lost up in one specific field that they know they can accomplish in college, as opposed to being well-rounded. And at that age, I see a decline because then people just start wanting to get messed up and paying rent. Or on the complete opposite side, you know, having kids or something, which can all be very positive, life-changing experiences, but it's still the daily routine that humans have been doing for however so long. So it's these new ideas we want to embrace in hope to change. If we don't want to change, then the kind of virtual kingdom we've built for so many reasons, I think everyone listening now is aware of, will come, you know, toppling down in some ways. But there are easy and clear paths to get to a better sort of circulatory system for the whole species ideas and energy.
Well, I think it's really about not accepting mediocrity. You know, if you're really good at something, you know you're really good at something. Basically, I've met many talented people who never, ever, ever exploit their talents and or make a living out of it. And they're really depressed, you know, like they're on medication. Like my friend Jared, for example, he's a really talented blues guitarist and he's on medication and he's depressed. And I said to him, bro, if you were in front of a crowd of 10,000 screaming fans playing your guitar, would you need that medication anymore? See, okay. The reason why you're not feeling good about yourself is because you're not doing what you're meant to be doing. You're not fulfilling your potential. You're simply stagnant, and your body and your mind are telling you that there's something wrong, and you can't ignore it. You have to fulfill it.
It's like the mythologist Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. You know, you have to find that thing that makes you happy or that you want to do. And, you know, I hope that's obviously what you're doing, and that's what we're trying to do with our projects. I know Frank's really trying to push things really hard to get it to work. I mean, it's very hard to have an alternative, you know, interest and then be able to live and focus on that interest and not have to waste all your time at like a low-paying high hourly job where, you know, you just kind of, you want to drink a beer and watch the game after work instead of research and, you know, develop your, you know, own abilities, meditate or anything. And that's, like I said, it's one of those things we're kind of all here to evolve consciousness. And some of us do that, obviously, and some of us don't. And it really doesn't take everyone, like I said earlier, with people inventing things at synchronous times at the same time. I mean, we're all obviously tapped into some kind of communal ebb and flow of consciousness. And, you know, it's kind of sad that you can look at your friends and family and think, well, you know, ignorance is bliss. You know, I guess that football game's really exciting, but look out your window, man. You know, see what's going on. And, you know, you can't just be sad that not everyone wants to look around at things, you know, like we do, or you kind of just have to let them do what they want while you do what you want, and hopefully, you know, everything is evolving towards the light in the end.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, musicians and a lot of different kinds of artists. It's easy, even among really creative and eccentric people, for them to want to fall into conversations that'll make that individual feel, you know, depressed or like it's redundant or boring. And pretty soon you feel like you can't, I guess, reach out to anyone. And if you're not researching a lot of stuff and you're just an artist or someone who's trying to work out creative energies that are naturally in you, and you keep coming up against this muck of the same social circles and the same job that you know, may insist that you get screwed up after it or whatever because of the nature of the people you deal with who are screwed up during it or something like that, it's a vicious bunch of cycles going on.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle, like the Tour de France. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest, Frank Zero, and the Violator Hailspore known as Jeremy. Back in a minute. Yeah, I'll be back. Must be some kind of way out of here. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Final segment here with my two very special guests, Violator Hellspawn, otherwise known as Jeremy, and Frank Zero. Their websites, once again, for Jeremy, is thestygianport.wordpress.com. That's thestygianport.wordpress.com. And for Frank Zero, projectpsycube.blogspot.com. That's projectpsycube.blogspot.com. Kind of like the Tesseract. What else can we really talk about here? I mean, we've only got like, what, 12 minutes left or something. I'd like to get some maybe some personal stories off you or if that's even possible, Frank. Were you ever into normal society, or have you always thought about things a little bit differently and a little bit more intelligently than most?
I was born in the future and moved with a race of aliens back to... No, that's not a thing. I've always been really interested in the occult and in paranormal stuff, but it really, I guess it's been like 14 years I've been concentrating on aliens and mind control and whatever, and now I'm finally getting back to my roots with comic book stuff. But it's really all rooted in loving the material that was in comic books and then seeing that some of it can be true and then getting really into the research enough to be disenchanted with it. Kind of at the end of the tunnel, but happy that I learned a lot of this stuff and that, you know, I know I'm acquainted with different possibilities and ways to explain comic book concepts in real life if they are true. That's confusing enough.
Well, and what did your dad do?
He's in the military. I'm not really too close to him. He's a teacher now.
I've always found that, like, if you've got... There's usually two reasons why people get into these kind of elements of research. And there's a lot of eclectic fields, but it's either A1, you're a really talented person, you've gotten really high up, and you had some kind of a fall from grace due to an element of scumbaggery within the organization you were working for, or two, your parents are kind of like that, and you sort of pick it up off of them, and it's sort of inevitable.
Yeah, I think for me there was a lot of elements... They were in the fiction that just have always appealed to me that may have something to do with real life or for me trying to uncover something in real life in a Mulder kind of way. But I had some really great grandparents that raised me, and my grandpa in particular was very, very tedious with information, and he wound up working very closely with the D-Day Museum for a lot of the things they did here in New Orleans. And I think they've benefited very much from having him. And his kind of attention to detail with World War II history got me interested in certainly aspects of military history and things like that. But when I started applying that, I guess, to, you know, trading card statistics and then finally the UFO abduction accounts, it all came very naturally as a filing system and taking notes and doing research and then eventually research interviewing people. So I got a gig with theexaminer.com, which I still do to some capacity, where I was just basically had a kind of journalistic license to talk to all kind of authors and people who worked on the comics and cartoons and things. And that really boosted me into, I guess, networking and understanding these higher realms, the people who are really writing these books or really writing these cartoons or whatever. And now I'm at a place where I think I've probably sucked in enough data. I'm really just excited to get working on the A-Star comic and expanding that as far as I can, and hopefully one day that'll be, you know, a movie or a cartoon or other mediums that I can expand on, and stuff that I've studied for so long I can go back and use some of those people that I've met who I think are very valuable in those fields and reintegrate them, which I've already started to do with comics and cartoons and conspiracy theories, and just see where that adventure takes me, as opposed to trying to take everything literally or write, you know, giant volumes that might appear in hindsight like Alex Jones or William Cooper, like, or something. I just rather help people develop their imagination and help them with bigger and better ideas or something.
Mm. And Jeremy, what about you? How did you get into this? Do you have some kind of a fall from grace, or Jeremy, are you there?
Sorry about that. I really just kind of have always seen connections in things. I grew up a military brat, but I was never really into you know, anything weird, conspiracy or pro-military, anything. It's pretty much standard, you know, childhood, except that I've always seen connections and things, and I started piecing those connections together, and I started to see a, you know, story form, mostly in movies, but I've also been always attracted to the same types of movies. I mean, my favorite movie is They Live, where an alien force rules the world, you know, the world's elite, and they live underground. But then if you take it from my perspective, they live 6 feet under, and they're actually called ghouls. They're never called aliens. They look like dead people. So is this the other worlds that, like I said, was influencing our imagination, the course of history, perhaps, even just acting as a muse for people to make movies such as They Live, or the original story that it was based on. It's, you know, I just kind of like to follow these threads and put them out there as sort of a story, and if people find them interesting, and I hope they do, then maybe they could build off of that and keep, you know, evolving the ideas and keep going forward with it.
Now, how old were you when you started to kind of make all these connections, or did it happen from a very young age?
Very young, you know, childhood, just watching all these movies. I mean, a lot of them were, you know, just my favorite movies had a lot of similar themes. And I kind of, you know, 9/11 happened, and all of a sudden, everyone's seeing connections everywhere. And then so many things have happened since that really it's, you know, I mean, it's fairly easy today to pretty much, that's what synchromysticism is. You could find connections literally anywhere and use them to sort of build a story and tell a story. And some people use it to predict future events. Some people use it to prove a conspiracy. And I kind of use it just to sort of evolve consciousness, evolve ideas, you know, keep trying to figure out what's really going on here. You know, I'm like Pythagoras or whoever always says, like, the only thing I'm sure of is my own ignorance. You know, no one knows. Anyone who says they know knows is a liar. You know, anyone who's channeled the pure, true information is, you know, psychotic. It's no one really knows the truth, and there's probably multiple truths. And you've got to really just kind of find your own path and just take what suits you and throw away the rest. And I would, you know, some people, they latch onto one thing and they make that their life's work, you know, the red pill conspiracy, you know, theory, truther movement. And other people, it's, you know, something else, and other people, it's something else. And they don't really see the connections that everything sort of has its own, you know, story, and it's all interrelated. And you can take a movie about something, can tie it to chemtrails or whatever. And that's kind of what we do in synchromysticism. I focus more just on movies as mythology and the whole hero's journey that we're all really on. And movies are, you know, like you were saying before, they seem to be tired, same old themes. I mean, if anyone who saw the Avatar movie, you know, it was great special effects. I saw it in 3D and IMAX, and it was a fantastic looking movie, but the story was, you know, Dances with Wolves or whatever. It's the same story, and the reason is because there is really that underlying sort of heroic story, and it's not, I don't want people to see movies as something separate. I mean, you're really in mythology when you read the story of Hercules or whatever. That's you. The person reading the myth is the hero in the myth. And in a lot of movies, which I'm a movie apologist, I hate TV, but I love movies. It's kind of weird. I mean, there's propaganda in both, I'm sure. But, you know, the movies really do kind of follow mostly that same typical heroic theme. And you have to wonder, maybe it has an effect on your unconscious mind. And maybe there's sure propaganda. I mean, you know, plenty of movies like the one I was saying was all about George Bush, you know, but are you picking that up, or really picking up sort of the hero's journey? And
well, I've always wondered if seeing heroes on movies in a fictional context would make you think that heroes aren't really real, and heroes certainly can't be you.
Right, and that's, well, you could take like Dirty Harry's movies and, you know, say, well, sometimes a hero can be you, like the Dorner case right now, although not much of a hero, he's kind of a weird personality, but like Falling Down or other movies, God Bless America was one, I think 2 years ago that came out, where basically they go on a killing spree to kill all the people that they hate, but, you know, we're not going to take that literally, but, you know, some movies like, say, Network, that came out in like 1976, was all about TV, was telling you it's all propaganda, it's a show. They're in it for the ratings.
I've watched all three of those movies for the first time in the last like month.
There's some synchronicity for you. I just watched a movie called John Dies at the End, which is fantastic, like weird synchronous movie. And some guy who's probably an alien in the movie says, "You ever notice when you hear a word for the first time, you're going to hear it again in the next 24 hours?" And that happens so much. You'll hear a word and you've never heard before, and all of a sudden it's written down somewhere you're reading or you hear it. It's a very weird, you know, it's a very weird world we live in, and I don't want people to get caught up in the conspiracy angle that, you know, the government, they're not, like Robert Anton Wilson says, you know, there's no overarching Illuminati conspiracy. Look at the people involved. I mean, are you kidding me? It's not possible. There's so many little pockets of people on all sides, you know, fighting, vying for power and control. And, you know, you can focus on parts of it or the whole thing. And I don't like it when someone like comes up to me and just learned about, say, chemtrails, and it's the only thing on their mind. There's a lot, you know, more going on. You can talk about the Fed or whatever that we have here. I'm sure you have a national bank there, too, that does the same thing to your fake money. But you know, there's just so many things going on, and I like to draw connections between all of these things, but especially movies, and kind of tell a story and hopefully, not, I don't want to say wake people up, but kind of let people realize that they can think for themselves and they can see things differently, have an imagination, and not yeah. in the negative context of thinking of things that are fanciful, but in the you know positive context of thinking outside the box, as they say.
And yeah. writing your own mythology is something vastly different from letting headlines tell your unconscious what you're actually worried about or want to talk about. They're vastly, vastly different adventures, yeah.
Well, I mean, final words I'd like to say here is in terms of Disney movies, has anybody seen a Disney movie where both the main characters' parents survive?
Not possible.
I think of offhand, no.
Isn't that interesting? And there's you know, and there was a conspiracy theory once upon a time that there was a thing called the Mafia where all the big crime bosses were actually connected. And they said, yeah, it's a conspiracy theory. It doesn't exist. Turned out it did. In fact, I think there's a shockingly large amount of conspiracy theories that people thought did not be true that later turned out to be. So we just don't know. Just be open. Thank you guys very much for your time. Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, otherwise known as Jeremy. We'll see you again sometime, folks.